There is a series of images that began haunting me while sitting in the warm comfort of the Shetland Library and the Shetland Archives in Lerwick. I can't seem to shake them. They seem so familiar yet foreign. I found them in Yves Wimkin's introduction to Irving Goffman's dissertation, Communication Conduct in an Island Community, now open access but just recently published in 2021. Fool that I am, or at least not much of a real scholar, I hadn't realized that one of the most preeminent figures of mid-20th century American sociology, who shifted the focus from statistical trends of alleged social groups, the focus on just social structure, writ large, to something smaller, to the guising of our smallest individual social interactions, did research in the Shetland Islands until long after I had completed my own dissertation. In the late 1940s and early 50s, Irving Goffman lived in Balta Sound on the most northerly island of Unst, and the images, the cape flashing through my mind's eye, are really three. The first is of how he didn't quite fit. Small odd bird in this mid-century crofting community. An octogenarian, a Miss Sutherland, described him to Wimkin as such.
He, as I remember, was not a very big person. Somehow one felt that he was rather aloof, a kind of solitary figure in a world of his own. He was said to be an anthropologist who was writing a book on the subject. This was a kind of deterrent to those of us who weren't very well educated. One often wondered if he wasn't lonely sitting by himself in that bare little cottage, but his need for privacy would be respected.
Goffman never seemed to make close friends with members of the community, but he went to all the public events, spent time in the one hotel, even worked there for a summer, washing dishes in the kitchen, and spent time watching men at the bar and playing billiards in the hall. Mostly, he stayed alone in his Peary Croft and took meals at the hotel. Rumor suggests he never took a meal or was invited into a crofter's family home. Goffman himself was clear on the matter. Quote, "This is not a study of a community, it's a study that occurred in a community of behavior which no living person ought to be publicly identified." But the pseudonym of place and persons that Goffman so rigorously constructed was pretty flimsy, especially for those who lived in Unst. It was a feint for Goffman, a way not to be forced by the trope of sociological community studies to have the truthfulness mistaken for biographical detail. And like many disguises, it's hard to figure to whom the mask was meant to face. Flimsy for those in Balta Sound who would precisely suspect behaviors associated with living persons. It's the essence of good gossip. But hardened for his dissertation committee, who had to accept a different object of study, not a community, but what he called the interaction order of communication itself. Was this a vice made into a virtue? The aloof and distant Goffman, unable to penetrate past the unfailing politeness of unfolks to actually make friends, conceptualizing that etiquette as a form of what he would call face work. Like Miss Sutherland, I hold this image of this young man sitting alone in his croft, a need for privacy respected, in my mind's eye making the vice of loneliness into the virtue of theory, a currency for another time and another tightly knit community. The second image is of Goffman with the one noted exception to being on his lonesome, James Jimmy Johnson. According to Wimkin, Goffman and Johnson were often companions on long walks through Unst, as well as at the bar of the Springfield, now Balta Sound Hotel, and often sat together in the reading room of the community hall. What drew them together? Goffman was not yet 30 when he did field work, his term for what he was doing in Unst, and Johnson was mid-60 at the time. I can imagine what drew Goffman. Johnson knew everyone and everything about the community, about Unst and about Shetland. He was the local postman, and he was well-traveled, had lived outside the island in Canada, experienced being a POW during World War I, pretty well-read in history and psychology, with an abiding interest in Shetland history, lore, and dialect. But what drew James Johnson to this young man who was so determined not to be a participant observer, but would speak that he was an observer of participation? Was it that disguise that Goffman wore of aloofness and solitude? Was it that he was never there but apart? Was it that they were doppelgangers and opposites, Goffman never of the community while in it, watching, observing, recording, and Johnson of the community, yet never quite in it, watching, accounting, and spinning stories of Unst? James Johnson was famous for his AKA, Hrazmia Butterfield, a popular character he was called upon to play at public events. Interviewed in 1983 by Robert Johnson of the Shetland Archive Oral History Project, Andrew Irvin, the Zetland County Councillor for Unst South between 1938 and 1945, recalled the many times he saw James Johnson slip on the character of Hrazmia Butterfield. And here is an edited version of part of that interview.
He took up the pen, name of Hrazmia Butterfield. But the sheer philosophy that Rasmus put across in his humorous speeches. He was speech to Yale, he was speech to Lerwick, to Bottom Club, he was speech everywhere for this. What the wish, and to a lot of his audience, was amongst the old Shetland phrases, and what he used a great deal of old words, and so could he pronounce them, he was excellent. But, after he listened at the back of it, there was a basic undercurrent, a sheer, downright logical philosophy that a lot of folk never got. In other words, he was having lovely skits at the powers that be in the pretty chantry and all that. He was having lovely skits and they passed over their heads and they didn't have enough brains to see it with. Clever man. He was a clever man. Halfway the concert, we could next ask me to come and give us a talk. And he spoke about three or four, like the brooms that went down in the People's Journal. He had three or four families, which he spoke about the folk of Bradfield. And the Lazarus of Wendysul, and the old man of Biggersul. And just either set of characters that he introduced. And he always did something. He had some party or had some discussion about something that's been on. But they would be political and they would be religious, very hats at the minister and they would be hats at the MP. And, you know, in a roundabout way, he got some very clever things across. Because I don't think half the audience saw through it. They only saw through the humorous words. Well, that was very much the way that Jimmy would have worked. He would have had, the neighbor men would have been the minister and the other would have been some of the elders and so on. But then forward the same theories in the Shetland dialect. And of course, life itself, just life. He exposed life and excellent philosophy.
For those who can't unpack the accent, a translation. He took up the pen name of Hrazmia Butterfield, but the sheer philosophy that Hrazmia put across in his humorous speeches, he was fetched to Yale, he was fetched to Lerwick, fetched everywhere for this. What was for a lot of audience was a mixture of old Shetland phrases which he used a great deal of words, and so he could pronounce them. He was excellent. But if you listen to the back of it, there is a basic undercurrent of sheer, downright logical philosophy that a lot of folk never got. In other words, he was having lovely skits at the power that be and the minor gentry and all that. He was having lovely skits at them passing over their heads, and they didn't have enough brains to see through it. He was a clever man. He was a clever man. If we had a concert, we'd go and ask Razmi to come and give a talk, and he spoke about three or four other, like the Bruins at one time in the People's Journal. He had three or four families, which he spoke about the folk of Bredafield and the girls of Indeshul and the old man of Bregersol. And just, he had a set of characters he introduced, and they always did something, had some party or had some discussions about something that had been on. But they were political, and they would be religious with small hits at the minister, and they would hit at the MP, and you know, in a roundabout way. He got some clever things. Of course, I don't think half of the audience saw through it. They only saw the humorous words. Well, that was very much the way of Jamie would have worked. He would have, the neighbor men would have been the minister, and others would have been some of the elders, and so on, putting forward the same theories in the Shetland dialect, and of course, life itself. Just life. He exposed life in an excellent fashion. Was that the commonality? Wearing different kinds of disguises to expose life in an excellent fashion? How does one do that without giving offense? The plainness of the truth leaves each of us vulnerable to being revealed as to the lies we tell ourselves and allow to be told by others. How different is that sociologist from the storyteller when each allows us to hear some truths without the immediate necessity of living with them or their consequences? But there is a third image that I can't seem to resolve in my mind's eye. 5 years after leaving Baltasound, 2 years after his dissertation committee really grudgingly accepted this odd dissertation, in 1956, when Goffman's masterpiece, Presentation of Self in Everyday Life, was first published in Scotland by the University of Edinburgh's Social Science Research Centre for the price of 10 shillings, James Johnson wrote to Goffman requesting a copy. According to the letter reproduced by Yves Wilkin in an article, Goffman refused Johnson's request. And it's that refusal that I can't seem to land upon.
Dear Mr. Johnson, it is a pleasure to hear from the present-day secretary of the Boating Club, but since the current holder of this office is yourself, no surprise is involved. You have never been counted a man upon whom a label could be put, geographic, national, or whatever. Tomorrow's paper could say that you have been elected senator from the sovereign state of Mississippi, and this would occasion no surprise. One would know that you had been passing through, and that a place known for its orators had decided to accept good sense as a price for acquiring a good speaker. The book you kindly mention is not a book at all, but a paper-bound, informal release of pale print and narrow merit. It is concerned with what Claire and Mary would call a pack of dirt and nonsense, to wit, the front that persons put on, and the things they hide behind it. The few Shetlandic references may therefore cause some offense, more so, since so much dull stuff must be gone through to get them. It is presumptuous for someone like myself to preach a moral lesson, but to justify some treachery I will do so. At least to you, since this may be a punishment you may deserve. Shetland, like other working-class communities, is engaged in coming up in the world. At such times, certain aspects of one's former way of life tend to be looking down upon and concealed, because of the way in which these forms of conduct are apparently viewed by those into whose ranks one is moving. It is the job of Shetlandic literary revival in Lerwick to show some of these forms of conduct are unique, colorful and worthy in their own right, something to be paraded not concealed. My job was supplementary to this. To show what Shetlanders sometimes forget, that people favorably placed in the world conceal just as much if not more than the individual who is rising to their level, and that the person who has attained a worthy position is the same kind of animal as the person who is beginning to acquire one. I am married now and have a son of three. Nothing much can be done about his last name. His first one, however, is Thomas Edward, and this according to my statistics is as Shetlandic as it can be. He is the only child in this city who knows that small is word some use for period. You suggested you owe me 30 shillings. I would never make so poor a bargain as to let you pay it to me. Twice a year I would like you to remember that you owe it to me, and then remember me, and that we are friends. This will be the interest, exorbitant, and hence in the manner of my people. When I am too old to move around, I will send my son to collect the principal from you. It is impossible to send regards. From Charlotte and Edward Mowat to Mary Park, and from there to Crossroads, would take many pages. Yours, Irving.
Why send a person upon whom no label could be put, geographic, national, or whatever? A person so thoughtful and well-spoken that he could fit everywhere, even the sovereign state of Mississippi, what he already knew, especially if it was in the form of pale print, narrow merit, a pack of dirt and nonsense. For almost 30 years, Razumihin Bredafield was telling what Shetlanders sometimes forget, that people favorably placed in the world conceal just as much, as if not more, than the individual is rising to their level, and that the person who has attained a worthy position is the same kind of animal as the person who is beginning to acquire one. But the mask was different, made of different stuff, of yarns for those in Shetland and of theory for those in academia. So was Goffman right that the Shetland references would cause offense? Did both Goffman and Johnson engage in a similar kind of treachery, and its justification a kind of punishment for each of them? I don't know the answer to any of these questions. What I do know is that James Johnson wasn't Goffman's informant, but his collaborator, in an effort that would change social theory in the 20th century. That by naming his son Thomas Edward, that twice a year he wanted to be remembered, and remembered as a friend. That the promise of sending his son was not to collect the debt, but to pay it. The St. Magnus Street Tapes are a Confabulated Communities production, produced, written, and narrated by Jonathan Church. Special thanks to the Pixabay community for musical interludes. Comments by Mary Sutherland and Goffman's letter to James Johnson are extracted from texts by Yves Winkins, from his introduction to Goffman's dissertation thesis that is open access, entitled Communication Conduct in an Island Community, and his article, Balter Sound as a Symbolic Capital of Social Interactions. Special thanks to Angus Johnson and Brian Smith of the Shetland Archives, and the family of Andrew Irvin, who gave permission for the edited extract of his oral history interview by Robert Johnson to be reproduced. This series has been made possible by the generous support of Arcadia University, especially Frank and Evelyn Steinbrucker.